You are listening to the Joshua Segafis Podcast.
Welcome back to the Joshua Segafis Podcast, the only podcast that teaches you how to be truly alpha. If you're ready to level up to succeed at dating, relationships, business, fitness, and everything else that matters, then stick around. This is exactly where you want to be.
This episode is brought to you by my flagship dating course, Dating in the Wild, The Adult Man Method. Are you sick and tired of a lackluster dating life? Gentlemen, if you know anything about my personal story, you know that I used to suck at dating. I could barely get a text back from a woman, much less a date. I was lonely, depressed, anxious, and felt like my dating life was truly a hopeless endeavor. But I didn't give up, and eventually it all changed. I got to work and figured out how to transform myself from being a total dating zero to an absolute dating hero and succeeded in creating the dating life of my dreams. And in this dating course, you can learn the exact skills, strategies, techniques, and thought processes that I learned over 2.5 years of studying, trial, error, blood, sweat, tears, testing, and lots of hard work. The secret is to learn what women evolved to look for in a mate, and then to develop yourself into the truly masculine, attractive, high-value man who taps directly into the instincts that guide the ever-mysterious female mate selection process. Not only will this course teach you how to transform your dating life, it'll also empower you to become a better, more successful man in the process. So click on the link in the description, grab the course, and get ready to change your dating life forever. Leslie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me today on the podcast is Leslie Dorice. We have spoken before. We have had a conversation via email. We have connected via Zoom to discuss relationship type topics. Leslie also had me on a radio show that she does as a guest. It was super fun. And I wanted to get her on the podcast because she's an expert on the topic of marriage. And marriage, you guys who listen to me for long enough to know what I think about marriage have heard me say, dating might seem like work, but making a marriage work, that's a kind of a different skill set. It's a slightly different skill set. You have to adjust your way of thinking. It is. And Leslie, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not. I often say it's more work to make a marriage work than it is to successfully date as a single person. That's what I usually say, but I'll be interested to hear what you think about that and whether you think that that's the right or wrong way to characterize it.
Well, that's a really interesting question because I've been out of the dating game for a long time. So maybe it's a lot harder now. I think I agree with you more that it's a different skill set unless you approach dating in a very particular way. And if you're approaching dating with the idea that I want to have a deeper in-depth relationship with someone versus me. And by the way, marriage should be fun. I never use miserable and marriage in the same sentence. I don't think they belong together. But a lot of times people are looking for different things when they're dating than what will really provide them with a solid foundation for a lasting relationship.
Gotcha. All right. Now, with that being said, before we jump too far into this, once again, this topic, how to make a marriage work. But Leslie, would you do me a favor and just introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them a little bit about your work, and then we're just going to go right into it.
Sure. Well, as you said, my name is Leslie Dorice. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. But I actually have moved into marriage coaching because I think that's a much healthier mindset. And I like helping people be successful, not necessarily drag them out of the ditch, which is what happens when a lot of times people go to therapy. I love working with men. In fact, I actually have created a whole program that I call the Hero Husband Project, which is to help men be the person, the partner, and the parent that they really want to be, and to provide them with the skills in really kind of, my goal is to sort of rebalance a lot that's out there because there's a lot of support out there for women and not as much support out there for husbands. And so, and I've gotten really tired over the years. Now I'm going to date myself here, people, that the way we see, the way we portray husbands and men in the media and and television is like they're these dolts who can't function. And I find that incredibly disrespectful, not to mention just wrong. and so I want to counterbalance that. I want to, because most of the men I know are good guys. They are loving, capable, wonderful human beings. And so to dump them in this basically nonsensical, you know, Homer Simpson kind of viewpoint is, I just really think is just not okay. And so that's really where I'm, and it's not that I don't support women in marriage, but I do think that there's a lot of people that already do that. And because I'm a woman, I can also let men know, here's what's going to work with your wife, and here's what's not going to work with her, and here's why. But it's about bringing you guys into the relationship as equals.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, with that being said, you answered it before I was going to ask. I was going to ask, so what's the difference between the coaching and the counseling? But it sounds like coaching is a more proactive thing.
It absolutely is. And that's not to say that I don't deal with some of the same kinds of things, because a lot of what people run into in their relationships is pretty normal stuff. How do we resolve disagreements? How do we handle our money? How do we raise our kids? All these kind of normal everyday things. And really, therapy is for when there are some, where there are some serious kind of problems. Gotcha. And one of the things also is, because going back to working with men, men don't like therapy. they feel like they're going to be beaten up. And to me, coaching is much more proactive. I want to give people skills that they can take away and use immediately. And it's not spending a lot of time dealing with, things that have happened in our past. Now, things that have happened in our past have an impact on our future. I mean, on our present and our future. And that's what I deal with. But we can't, as much as I would love a time machine or a magic wand, we can't go back and undo stuff. But what we can do is take what we need to learn from it and move forward.
I love that. No, that's amazing. Okay. Now, to bring value to the listeners, here's the question, and this is maybe a hard question, but here's the question. Now, let's say that someone is coming into this like, oh, marriage. Yeah. You know, I don't really know, what makes a marriage work? Like what, if we're going to start from the basics and the fundamentals and just maybe walk through a set of steps that someone would take to try to reasonably assure that they understand what it takes to make a marriage work in a fundamental, foundational way. Not that that's a small question, but, right. but like just to set the tone, what would you say?
Well, it's really becoming part of a team. And, you know, there's kind of this idea of marriage that it's a tug of war, that it's a, you know, I have to either totally subsume myself into what I call the marriage blob, or I have to hold so tightly onto my independence because, oh my gosh, I don't, you know, and it's neither of those things. It's about how do I hold on to myself as an individual and contribute to something that's bigger than me. One of my all-time favorite quotes, and it's by a man named John Barth, is marriage is our last best chance to grow up. And because it really takes, and I don't use compromise in relation to marriage, it takes negotiation. It takes being able to know when I have to stand solid and where I can give. And it really is about working with another human being to create something bigger than either one of us. And that's the thing I love about marriage. And it's also the thing that's most challenging about it.
Gotcha. Okay. So this teamwork, I feel like I can speak a little bit to this, and this fear of not wanting, like the part of the second one that you said, where it was like, oh, I got to cling to my independence, right? This mm-hmm. is how I felt after my marriage. And my listeners know, well, one of the things I talk about a lot is my marriage and how when that ended, I hit rock bottom. It was a very dark place. And that's part of what led me on this journey. I call the alpha journey, mm-hmm. journey of realizing that I had to like fix my life, starting with, you know, myself and then work my way out. Now, with this being said though, I went through that phase where I was like, oh, I'm so independent. I don't need a woman, blah, blah, very, a lot of bitterness, a lot of resentment, mm-hmm. like that kind of thing. So I can relate to that. And here's the question. If a guy is feeling that way, right? If that's his headspace, what does that mean? And what can be done about it?
Well, one, it means he's perfectly normal.
That's reassuring.
because it is, it's, I don't like necessarily using the word tension because tension has a negative connotation to it, yeah. but it really is. I like to think of it more as a dance mm-hmm. where we need to learn how to move together. And sometimes in dances, we get to do our own thing. But it's still part of the bigger picture. And it's learning the balance. It's learning that I can still be me and part of something else. And if we think of, you know, I'm a big baseball fan. And so I liken marriage to the dance between a pitcher and a catcher. They have different roles. They have different skill sets. But they combine those skill sets to work together in this common goal. And the catcher doesn't pitch and the pitcher doesn't catch. It's like, don't do that. And so it's learning and talking about and deciding what we want this to look like. Because my view is that your marriage is unique to the two of you. Mm-hmm. And it only has to work for the two of you. But it has to work for both of you. If it's only working for one of you, it's not going to work. And then it's how do we bring that to the table? And so a lot of this is most everything else in our life, we plan. We, you know, learn a trade or we go to school to learn a, you know, to learn a profession. But we just kind of walk into marriage going, okay.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. And the truth of the matter is there are things that we can do to plan it out, but most of us are playing it by ear or by yeah. the seat of our pants is, you know, in a lot of cases.
That was me 100%. I had no idea. I was just like, oh yeah, I get married. Or it's like, well, actually what it was, oh, meet a nice girl. Of course I like girls. I want to meet a girl. Start dating her. Oh yeah. Oh, I guess we should get married sometime pretty soon. You know, this is what's expected. Terrible.
Yes.
Like no thought about the great responsibility, the gravity of that, right? All these things. Now, but you said something that I want to go back to just for a minute. You said, you know, there are steps you can take to plan it out right now. What would those things be like?
Okay. Well, first we have to have a pretty good familiarity with who we are ourselves. What are our values? What are our morals? What do we want our life to look like? Are we the kind of person who wants to travel the world and never, I mean, my ex-brother-in-law used to talk about never own any more than you could put in your car. So he was not the, you know, settle down picket fence kind of person. And, you know, so we have to know who we are and what matters to us. Mm-hmm. Do we want to have children? That is a huge question that a lot of people actually don't ever talk about, which blows mm-hmm. my mind. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, this is a pretty big thing because that's going to change your life.
Do you feel not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but most people who come to marriage coaching or counseling, they never talked about the children, even children, which to me is like, one of the big, big, big things, right? So to me, it's like, well, obviously, unless you just assume children are going to come with it, you won't talk about it. But really, do people not talk about that?
Some don't.
Really?
You know, and there is a lot of assuming going on. And there's a very famous expression about what happens when we assume.
Yes.
And, you know, and because we, and a lot of the times we don't talk about these things because we're afraid of the answer.
Okay.
And if I, you know, so if, and there are a lot of people, and I really do not recommend this as a course of action, that it's mm-hmm. like, oh, we'll fix this once we're married.
Yeah. I could see that.
It's like, please don't do that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a fear response. Like you see something or the potential for something that scares you. So it's like then, and the natural inclination is, okay, let's avoid that. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Yeah. But obviously that would be disastrous.
Well, because it's a big, and what I talk about is people like to avoid conflict. And by the way, that's a whole nother word that I have an issue with, but you know, we can't avoid conflict. We merely postpone it. And the longer we postpone it, the harder it's going to be to deal with. Yeah. If you don't want children and I do, we need to determine that before we get married, mm-hmm. because that is something that is, if we're both really solid in those positions, we can't continue for, no matter how wonderful you are, no matter how much I love you, we cannot continue because we want drastically different things out of life.
Yeah.
And to give in is disastrous.
Yeah, that, okay. And I was about to say, like, it might even be worse, right? Than it not working out is like, okay, yeah. But then what comes later might be resentment, might be like, wow, I'm trapped in this. I didn't want mm-hmm. it. And these things. Yeah. Okay. That makes
yeah.
sense. All right. So now I kind of interrupted your flow. You were talking about these steps to prepare.
Right.
And then I interrupted you. If you,
well, I mean, and there's so many things, you know, how do we spend money? What does money even mean to each of us? Right.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things that are scary to talk about, but they actually bring us closer together. And just because we disagree about something doesn't mean the relationship can't continue, unless, of course, it's like having children, then we actually have to be on the same board, because you can't sort of have a kid. but these are the kinds of things that get put to the side. And we do the dating, we fall in love, we think, you know, oh, I want to marry this person, I want to, but then, and then we get into it, and we have the wedding, which everybody is like, oh, great party, we want this wedding. And then it's usually anywhere from 6 months to a year later, we're going, what the heck did we do? and how do we move forward? Because if we haven't had these kinds of conversations, you know, we don't know how. And that's the other thing, is learning how to have difficult conversations productively, not fighting. Disagreement is a given, fighting is a choice.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, that is something that I wish more people understood. Like when I was young, that was a big thing, like, you know, fighting. Now I look back and I think, wow, what a tragedy. All of those, what could have been, just, we talk about them, emotions got involved, they got heightened, and it turns into a fight. And it's like, and that's not productive. Like mm-mm. there's nothing productive about it. Yeah. And that's a shame. That's a huge shame. And I talk a lot about stoicism on the channel mm-hmm. and you know, we can't control our emotions, but we can control how we act, right? We can control how we, so it's like, if I can feel angry. Oh, go ahead. You look like you want to say something.
Yeah. And I'm going to just respectfully disagree. Mm-hmm. We actually can control our emotions. We can actually choose what emotion I want to feel. Now, we can't choose the initial reaction, because that's an automatic thing.
Yeah.
But if I get angry about something, I get to decide, do I want to be angry about this, or do I want to find another way to be?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Because you can, like, you know, for example, if you get angry, right? John Gottman talks about, if you get angry, one of the best ways to, you know, resolve the anger before it, you know, creeps into your behavior is to do the count to 10, you know, you mm-hmm. count to 10, you think, and it's like, okay, so we deploy a technique for helping to change our emotions. Oh, 100%. Yeah. I totally understand.
And that. Do you know why counting to 10 works?
No. I mean, I read that book, but I don't actually remember exactly the reason.
Right. Well, what happens when we have a strong emotion, and usually what I call the harder emotions, is it triggers our primal brain. And what our brain interprets is, we are under attack, which means our fight, flight, or freeze mechanism gets triggered. Mm-hmm. And basically our primal brain takes over, and our cognitive brain sits in the background. It's not online. Okay. And that counting to 10, that pause, gives the cognitive brain enough time to come online and go, okay, primal brain, there is no lion chasing us. You are not going to die. Your partner is upset about something, but nobody is going to die here. And that's why that counting to 10 actually works.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So it's almost like a procedure for bringing the more rational part back online. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That's super helpful. And I think that that type of thing isn't talked about enough for it to matter. And you probably encounter that a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, with that being said, you know, learning to communicate, you know, this is an important step, right? Mm-hmm. What other steps should people take if they're like, you know, what does it take to make a marriage work? If we were going to continue on through the steps, what would be another thing, like an ingredient?
One is actually committing to seeing it through.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Okay.
And there are real deal breakers to a successful relationship. But committing to writing out the rough times, mm-hmm. and also having a really good support system. What we know is that people who are surrounded by other successfully married people generally do better. People who are surrounded by a lot of people getting divorce is contagious. And we want to be around people who are going to support our unit. In a lot of marriage ceremonies, they actually ask the people present, will you support this couple? That's part of the ceremony. And so we don't want to go to our friends and badmouth our partners.
Yeah.
You know, or if we do, we want our friend to go, wait a minute, that's not the Josh I know. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and they'll call us on it to go, you know, as opposed to, yeah, he's a jerk, just dump him, blah, blah. You know, it's like, and so surrounding ourselves with people who really support us is a critical component.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's so true with everything. Like that's true with success, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Jim Rohn says, and I agree, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So it's like, well, if I'm hanging out with people who are just sitting around playing video games, smoking weed, like not wanting to take their life seriously, it's like, okay, that's going to have an effect on me. Or I can mm-hmm. hang around entrepreneurs and people who are successful. So marriage, you know, and that's so true. I've never thought of it that way. Being around people who have successful marriages, that's a super good thing to think about. That is actually, that's pretty insightful. And another thing I want to ask you about, so this commitment, this business mm-hmm. of commitment. Okay. Now mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of business though, specifically, right? Mm-hmm. So commitment, like one thing that commitment helps to do is, and tell me what you think about this concept. The way I think of commitment is disregarding major outlying factors. Like, you know, so for example, like, you know, barring your partner going off the deep end, trying to kill you, something like that, right? Commitment yeah. is kind of the idea of we remove the idea of, you know, bailing on this off the table. Like we completely take it off the table. Now all of our energy is focused forward. It's almost like burning the boats, right? That,
yes.
that concept, right? Just bouncing that off you, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, and so what that does is it instills in us, okay, we've got to find a solution. So taking the boat analogy, because early on in my career, I actually came across, I was in a seminar where he was actually likening marriage. Okay, you're in a boat together and you each have an oar and you better be rowing in the same direction at the same space or you're at the same pace or you're not going to, you know, you're just going to be like stuck. Oh, mm-hmm. And so we're out in the middle of this water and we need to get to shore. Are we going to work together? Are we going to find a solution? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, sometimes yes, maybe there's another boat passing that somebody can help us. And it's like, oh, help, we need some help. But it's, are we willing to dig in and go deeper into what this is about? And again, this is the beauty of marriage. And it's also the challenge, because, you know, we're working together, we're codependent, we're interdependent. I shouldn't say codependent, because that's got a whole other meaning. We're interdependent. And I'm going to bring my best self and my skill set, and you're going to bring your best self and your best skill set, and together we're going to be able to get through this. And I'm not going to be wedded that it has to be my way. Mm-hmm. We're going to find the best solution to get us through this. And if that solution is we go talk to somebody, or if that solution is, you know, we lock the door and we don't leave until we come to a solution, you know, whatever it might be. And there are some cases where we have to be really careful to say, never say never divorce, but we have to really be very clear about what triggers that. And when I work with people, I tell people there are three things that are deal breakers. And one of them, I mean, and the one that a lot of people think is a deal breaker actually isn't, but it's unaddressed addiction of any kind, unaddressed abuse of any kind, unaddressed illness, whether that's physical or mental, of any kind. Those are the only three things that make working on a marriage not compatible.
Oh, really? Okay. Those are the deal breakers.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay.
And by the way, it's unaddressed. So if I have an addiction and I'm working on it, we can do it.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So unaddressed illness is interesting. I wouldn't have expected that to be the case.
Well, and a lot of times when I first did it, it was like unaddressed mental illness, because that's a real behavioral personality interaction thing, until I actually had a client who was a diabetic who refused to monitor her blood sugars.
So her husband
took that over, and it was a really bad situation. He didn't want that responsibility, and it created all kinds of tension because she wouldn't deal with it. And so that's when I added, it's like, okay, there's some other things here that are a real problem.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Because if someone won't take responsibility for themselves, then it's like, well, that is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. This idea of commitment, I think in our culture, I think is so foreign. Like to truly intentionally commit to anything, not just marriage, but also to, I think people don't commit to their own path to success. Like, this is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't exactly know why that is. However, the thing about it is that when you don't commit to a thing and you leave that open, it's like, well, maybe I'll just quit. Right. In my experience, in my life, what I've realized is that this causes me to act with I allow certain behaviors to creep into my program based on that little bitty half out behaviors. And usually they're fear-based. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there's a part of me that's ready to cave into fear. And maybe that's already doing it. And this keeps us from finding good solutions. This is what I've found. Right. Anyway, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to contribute to that or.
Well, commitment is hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
It's really hard. So if we're not clear about what the goal is, then it's really hard to be committed. I just wrote a blog post today, and it was talking about, you know, a lot of times people think going to a marriage professional means, you know, that you can only do it if you're in trouble. And I open, you know, they open up the blog with, does Steph Curry and LeBron James stop practicing because they're the best at what they do? And we go, no, because that's why they're the best at what they do. Mm-hmm. They keep that commitment level high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's what gets them through injuries. It's, you know, and it's like, and yes, at some point in time, we have to decide, do I still want to be doing this? Tom Brady's another prime example. He keeps quitting and coming back because he's not ready to give it up yet. And he's still performing at a really high level because he's committed.
Yeah.
To doing the work. And I mean, you know, who wants to get up at, you know, when your knees are hurting and all this, it's like, no, I'm going to stay in bed. It's cold outside. I want to.
Yeah. But you got to put it in for the team and for yourself. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. 100%. I completely agree. And we lose out on something when we don't commit to things. We do ourselves a major disservice. It's almost like even committing to something that is a little bit like that maybe isn't the best thing, right? Even that is better. Like picking any direction is better than no direction. Of course, you may have to pivot once you get going, but at least you're committing to something. Okay. So,
yeah. And one of the challenges with marriage is two people committing.
Yes.
And it's very easy to say, well, why do I have to do this when my partner isn't? And I hear that all the time. And I have a couple of responses to that. The first one is, because when you took your marriage vows, you made a commitment. You said, I am going to do this. And so you're being disrespectful and dishonorable to yourself. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is when I am bringing my best self, it encourages my partner to. It's kind of like if you've ever played a game with somebody who's a little bit better than you are, not like stepping on the court with LeBron James, but who's better than you are, they make you better. You play better. And so when you step up and go, no, I am going to be this good partner, it actually encourages my partner to do the same.
Yeah, that's a leadership principle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you about this. Now, I want to go back to the marriage blob thing that we talked about at the very beginning. So initially we talked about this, this clinging to independence, but you know, a lot of people do find themselves lost in a marriage. And it's like, they've lost their sense of individuality and whatnot. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like for someone who's like, you know, I feel like that. I feel like I've lost my sense of individuality. I feel like I'm stuck in a blob. I'm like, I'm not interesting. I'm not fun. I don't have any passion. What the hell's going on? What would you say?
Well, usually what happens is that they have, for multiple reasons or lots of different reasons, lost touch with themselves because And you mentioned it before, fear. I'm afraid of holding a line and having boundaries within a relationship is incredibly critical. I actually had a client many years ago. She was a writer and her husband said to her, well, when are you going to stop writing? And it's like, it's not what she does. It's who she is, right? Whether she was published or not did not matter. She had to write. And he didn't understand that this was part and parcel of her. And so, you know, we start to give away pieces of ourselves because we think we have to. It's to keep the peace. Mm-hmm. It's expected. What, you know, I hate the word should, right? Mm-hmm. My partner may have expectations of me, but I have to agree to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's okay to say no. Now, I think as a couple, as a partner, we should say yes as often as we can, because there are times when we need to say no, and those no's ding the relationship. So we want to make sure that we have a lot of yeses to protect against those no's that come. But if there's something that's important to me, like my client in her writing, then there needs to be space in the relationship for it. Now, reasonable space. If I like to play, I mean, I actually had a client who he loved to play soccer. He played on two teams and coached two other teams, which meant he was never home. Gosh. Okay, so that's a little bit crazy, right? Yeah. It's like, no, you don't have to stop playing soccer. We just need to do it in a way that is not antagonistic to the relationship. And this is where that push me, pull you comes in, because, the slippery slope, if I give an inch, right, then I lose it. But that's actually because I don't have control of myself and the ability to say, this is important to me. We need to make room for it.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So when you're talking about too many no's ding the relationship, right? And then the yeses, we should try to say yes. Okay. Now I'm going to bring this up. This is a hard topic. So I'm just going to jump right into it. Right. Okay. What about these? There's this huge conversation that goes on online, especially in some of the circles that I listen to and watch, about like sexless marriage, right? Marriage without any intimacy. And this is a big, like, this is something that I think a lot more people deal with than we realize, because, you know, nobody talks about it until it's online and anonymous or whatever. So now, someone in that kind of a situation, can you speak on that a little bit? Like, what maybe sometimes what's going on and what kind of the path to a solution is to something like that?
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because this is a really tough topic. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of different things. Has it always been that way? Or is it something that's happened over time? And a lot of times people don't know how to talk about it. And this is one of those cases when I get a little annoyed, that's an understatement, with members of the female persuasion who look at men and go, you guys, all you want is sex. You're just hound dogs. You don't care about me. I'm just a vessel. And that is so far from the truth for most men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most men, it is a way of showing their love. It is a way of truly connecting. It is a way of being intimate, not just physically, but emotionally. And so to have that shunted aside as, you know, it's disrespectful. Now, here's the thing. There is a lot of misinformation, both for men and women, about how women work sexually. Mm-hmm. And so this is part of the challenge. There are, you know, hormonal fluctuations throughout the month. You know, there's times of our lives when things are very different. You know, women are much more creatures of their hormones and also of their thought process. And you were talking about, before we got on the air, about the masculine and feminine, and a lot of times women spend a lot of time in their masculine energy outside of the home, and to come into their feminine energy, well, first off, that's not always encouraged, which I think is crazy, but okay.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
But you've got these two masculine energies fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. And that is not conducive to a good sex life. And so sexless marriages, especially if one person is, I mean, if both people aren't interested in sex, great, that's not a problem. But it's the discussion of what's enough. It's a discussion of how do I work? There is at least 50% of women are what we call responsive desire, meaning that women don't feel feel desire until they're actually physically aroused,
That surprises me that you say that, because I have not heard that term before. I've never heard that. Yeah. 50% of women, this is like a known thing. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
no, but this is my point.
Yeah.
The knowledge is out there. People just don't have it. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you are, and many men are what are called spontaneous desire, meaning, okay, whoop, thought pops into my head, I'm raring to go. And this is a lot of the tension between why does my wife not initiate? Does that mean she doesn't find me sexy? That's just not the way she's wired. And by the way, this is a biological thing. This is not, has anything to do with whether or not I find you attractive or sexy or whatever. It's got nothing to do with that. It's not you. It's almost any.
It's almost like a personality type thing.
Well, yeah. But here's the difference. And here's what gets really confusing about it. In the beginning, when our hormones are running, when our in-love hormones are running rampant, we have spontaneous arousal or desire. Mm-hmm. It's only once we settle in to the relationship that and usually it's when those in love hormones and neurotransmitters calm down. So this is a biological thing, not a choice thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Then our natural tendency to have responsive desire takes over, and the guy goes, "Wait a minute, what happened here?"
Yeah. Okay. I see. So maybe he interprets it as like, "Oh, she lost interest in me," but it's actually just, you know, it's like. How fascinating. I did not know there was a name for that. And I did not know that there was a statistic for it. Wow. How that is crazy. Okay. Not crazy in like a crazy way, but crazy as in, wow, what an important piece of information.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a lot of times it's, are we making time? And I'm not just talking about time for the actual sex act itself, but time for the relationship, time to connect with each other. Time to be able to move in to that. You know, are we getting enough, and how we are health wise? Are we getting enough sleep? Are we eating the right things? It all plays in to this. And you know, I talk about this where right now, busy is a badge of honor. And busy is antithetical to a good sex life.
Yes. You know? Yeah, that's true. 100%. Yeah.
And if you're trying to squeeze it in, because women take most women, it takes us more time to rev up. And so it's like, really, we've got 15 minutes. Okay. It's not good for me.
Mm-hmm. It's like not worth the work. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, as opposed to, and again, we can have, and sometimes taking the goal of intercourse off the table, where sex is so much more than this one act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if we get so fixated and, you know, on this one act and that nothing else is going to be good enough, well, then, you know, we're in this all or nothing mindset versus, well, what could we do that both of us would enjoy this evening?
Yeah, it's pressure, right? There's a lot of pressure that can creep in there. And I think that there's another part of that maybe where I really feel when I coach men, especially in the dating marketplace, like men who are trying to better their dating lives, a lot of men deal with sexual shame. And so from that perspective for men, I think that also plays into it because it's like, so they get up a certain amount of nerve to be like, "Hey, you want to have sex?" Fighting off this like, "Oh, I'm a pervert because I want sex," or blah blah blah. These like,
or they've been told they are, which they're not. But okay,
no, yeah, 100%. But there's a little part of them that they have to fight that back, that belief, right? And then it's like, well, she's like, and then she says something like, maybe like, "Well, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm a little tired, right?" But then, so this is like, instead of him being like, "Oh, gotcha, I hear what you're saying. Let's be creative. Let's do something," like, instead of having the freedom to have that energy. Fighting this shame. Now, this isn't always, I'm not saying this is always the case, but what do you think about that? Like, do you think that that's a factor?
Well, I do, but going back to the responsive desire, because here's the thing. And if women know, if both people know this, then it's kind of like, okay, well, let's just start doing something. Let's cuddle, let's touch, because that's how that arousal starts happening. Right. But if you just ask me cold, it's like, "Yeah, not really. I'm not really interested." And it's like, neither one of them really understands where that statement is coming from. And if you don't understand the context, then it's like, "Oh, she doesn't want me," which then gets into his head about, you know, you talk about sexual shame or just, you know, I'm not who she wants. I'm not enough.
Yeah.
And then that just, you know, then we just start that downward spiral.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's so, the way you explain it makes it so clear. And that's so interesting. It's like something that we should be given in a manual when we're born, right? we should get that label. Like, here's your specs.
I mean, and a lot of the research, the traditional research that's been done around sex has been done with men. And so that's the model that we have. And I'm saying about 50% of women don't match that model. So everybody's frustrated. The men are frustrated. The women are frustrated. It's like, why isn't this working?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're both frustrated, no doubt. Not, you know, I mean, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
Okay. So now this responsive desire, this business is one really important, like, part of this discussion about the sexless marriage, mm-hmm. or the marriage that's struggling with intimacy. Right. Are there any other mind blowers in there that we should cover? Because, you know,
well, and a lot of times, and I'm thinking of he's actually a friend of mine, and I was really trying to help him, where he has been in a sexless marriage almost since day one, and he won't confront her about it.
Oh, really?
Let me rephrase that. When he has tried to bring it up, she has been adamant in shutting him down.
Okay.
And he doesn't know how to navigate that. And I don't think he's alone. I think there are a lot of men.
I was going to say, just hearing you describe that, I'm sure I've talked to men who would probably absolutely be like, oh, I can understand. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I've talked to men in that situation, I'm sure.
This is a case, and I talked about it before. Well, one, this is something that that couples need to be talking about a lot. More, you know, and with greater frequency, because like I said, there are times in our lives when things change, but it's also about the boundary and the expectation. Mm-hmm. Part of being in this relationship, because many of us are serial monogamous. We are inherently monogamous. We are not, we can't be involved sexually with more than one person.
Yeah.
Part of that has to do with the fact that it isn't that when we are sexually engaged with another person, we are releasing oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone. And so we can have one night stands and that's fine. But repetitive sexual involvement with a person frequently and almost, and I'd be tempted to say almost always, then involves an emotional component. Mm-hmm. And so if you are basically a monogamous person, I want to be intimate with you in all of these ways, being physical intimacy being one of them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have it with somebody else. And it's important to have. I mean, we've spent the last 2 years in this horrible situation where people have had to be isolated, mm-hmm. and not being able to touch each other. And what we know is that touch to human beings is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
Not just sex, touch.
Simple
touch.
Yes. Yeah.
And so a lot of times, not only are the marriages sexless, they're affectionless.
Yeah. Yeah, sex is only one degree of it, right? There's many other degrees that are, I often say sex is the most intimate social construct, but there are so many others, right? So many mm-hmm. others. And so, yeah, no, great point. That's a super good point.
And so when I, as your partner, am denying you a basic human need, that is not okay.
Okay, so that is a really good segue into another question that I have for you. And I wanted to run this past you and see what mm-hmm. you think of it, right? Now, so men and women, and this kind of goes back to that polarity between mm-hmm. men and women type thing, right? Now, what do you think of this idea where, okay, you have a man and a woman and they're in a marriage, right? Do you believe... or you know, I guess believe, know, how, what's your observation, you know, that it generally works better. And I think that this is advice that, how can I say this? I'm trying to think of the best way to word this. As a man, let's put it this way. I'm going to use myself as an example.
Okay.
As a man, I have found by far, by a huge margin, no question that, you know, I learned in my life with the women I was dating and whatnot, that I should take a leadership role as a man in all aspects of the relationship, right? In making sure that asking her on dates, you know, even if we're still together, even if we're living together, it's like, let's go on dates. You'll take the lead for the dates, take the lead with the intimacy, take the lead in making sure that we're having good conversations, right? So this leadership role. Now, I found that I felt like this was this, how can I say this? This was one difference that after my marriage, like I started to implement, right? In my marriage, I was not a leader in any of those ways. And so I felt like I had a much better experience after I started to take the lead in this respect. Now, with this being said, this leads to a question of, well, is this a maybe a, is there a masculine feminine role that we can say is pretty general, or is it just kind of whoever, like whoever's personality may be more better suited to that role of taking the lead, or is this concept of one person taking the lead not the ideal, and then they should divide these responsibilities, you know, like, you know, do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's difficult thing to
I do. And the answer is going to be complicated because it's yes, yes, and yes. Okay. And what I mean by that is I have if I'm in a relationship, I have a responsibility to keep it going. Now, is that a 50-50 responsibility? No, I say it's 100-100. Mm-hmm. Now, so if we're talking about dates, I think that, you know, my viewpoint is that should kind of, that should not always fall on one person's shoulders to plan the date. Okay. That's something that I think can almost be 50-50, right?
Okay.
We set up a date night, whether it's once a week or once a month or whatever we do, and you plan it one time and I plan it another time. That kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off. And, you know, in terms of starting a conversation, and again, I'm going back to planning. I'm a big proponent of having regular time together set aside where we will have conversations. So that may mean, okay, we're going to discuss whatever, you know, maybe we have a problem we need to solve and we're going to solve it here. Or maybe it's just even, where do you want to go on the next vacation? You know, but it's time set aside so that when we need to have an important conversation, we are practiced at it. Mm-hmm. So we're not scared of having the conversation and we have a time where we can do it. And I tell people that time needs to be sacred and only to be not taken advantage of if there's an act of God or once in a lifetime activity, like your grandmother is turning 100. Mm-hmm. But otherwise that is time for us to be together, because basically, and they need to be kept separate. Don't discuss problems on date night. For me, date night, we are having fun. That is the sole purpose. No other purpose other than to have fun and enjoy each other's company.
Oh yeah. That's a good piece of advice. That's a very good piece of advice.
Now where the difference might come in is when we're talking about initiating sex. Mm-hmm. Can women initiate sex? Should women initiate sex? Yes. But that's also into that masculine feminine. And sometimes women can be in the masculine around sex, but a lot of times it works better when we're in the feminine, which means the man being the leader, the man being confident about what, you know, about where things are going, but also, and here's a nice way to put you guys in straight jackets. We want you to be confident, but flexible, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
You know, and that's a challenge because again, I'm still trying to figure out, does anybody go to school for sex? I don't know. You know? And, you know, because that allows women to get out of their brains, to get out of their heads, because here's the thing. Also, this is what happens with women. if we go into our brains and start the to-do list while we're having sex, it's like it's shut off.
Yeah.
The kid cries, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that just that happens to be just a function of the way we are. So part of that is if we're not having to think about it, there's a confusing thing out there, and it's called a rape fantasy, but it's not really rape. It's where women want to be taken. They want the man to be in charge, not in a disrespectful, painful, nasty way, but in a loving, confident, I can melt into you kind of way.
Yeah, and like so a leadership, take the lead kind of way. Like, yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that's a very common fantasy for women. And it goes against a lot of, well, we're these capable, strong women. Yeah. It's like, yes. And the two do not have to be mutually exclusive. And that really is that whole masculine feminine concept that we both have those qualities in us. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. No, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. And to me, this kind of thing is important to talk about, like the differences between men and women. Right. And it's like, on one hand, it's kind of like, okay, well, we're more alike than we are different. It's like, yeah. Oh yeah. Heck yeah. Mm-hmm. But boy, we're just enough different that we get really confused, right? We get really confused. And right. So it's helpful to talk about. Okay. So now with that being said, let's talk. I'm going to run another scenario past you. Like I'm going to bounce another experience off you and see if you can shed any light into how this might like basically just add some wisdom to this. Okay. So another thing that I have really learned is when you are a man, and this is coming from a man's perspective, and now I'm talking about this in the sense of like dating, but it absolutely probably applies even more so to marriage, honestly. But when you're the man in a relationship and you're like, okay, I want to be a capable leader. I want to be able to lead. I want to be able to be strong. I want to be able to be someone she can rely on and this type of thing. Right. So this is a big responsibility. Mm-hmm. I think when I was younger, I had no concept of this. Right. And so, and I think this plays into exactly what you were talking about, where the woman, like she, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of steps to intimacy. And this is part of it. Like, Franz der Waal, do you ever read Franz der Waal? He wrote Chimpanzee Politics and Mama's Last Hug. So he's a primatologist, but he talks about chimpanzee emotions and then also human emotions and the role that emotion plays in our everyday life. It's a very powerful book. He's a very, an incredible person, but, he talks about how, oh man, now that I started talking about Franz der Waal and I lost my train of thought. Let me think. I was talking about emotions. A range of emotions, right? So there's this whole spectrum of emotions that we're dealing with, and intimacy is many things, not just sex. Okay. So now as a man, I have come to learn, there's a lot to this leadership business. When I'm talking to her, there's many things that I should be aware of. Being the leader, being the alpha in a tribe, being the top one. A lot of people think, oh, it means you're in charge. You tell people what to do. Yeah. But no, that's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. This is about being the one who's invested in seeing the whole tribe succeed, like the one who's responsible, and also being consoler in chief. Right. So it's like, if I'm talking to my girlfriend, and this is something that I've learned the hard way going through life and crashing and burning many relationships and trying to learn what this means, because I didn't really have anyone teach me this stuff. I had to go hunt for it and then figure it out. But I learned, you know, there's a whole process. When I get with my person, she probably needs to talk about her day. You know, she probably needs to vent about work. I'm going to ask how she's doing. Like we have some frustrations to talk about. We have got some hopes to talk about. There's this business of being consoler in chief that's very, like, I think crucial to this role of intimacy between men and women. And so I think it's in men's best interest to understand, you know, she has a lot of needs. And in sex may be a need, but we've got to get some of these other needs. Like we have to see to them for the well-being of her, right? And we do this for everyone else too, but she's the intimate partner, right?
Right.
So, and when you take real responsibility for all those things, like real responsibility, not like, I want to, oh, come on, talk about your day so we can have sex. It's like, that's right. Completely the wrong approach.
Yeah, it's the wrong motivation.
Yeah, the motivation is, I want to see this person thrive and I want to see them succeed. And sex is really just actually an outlier thing that happens between the two of us to fulfill a certain range of like intimate functions and whatnot, right? But, but as the leader, my foremost responsibility is to see this person thrive, to see them be able to talk when they need to talk, to be able to have someone they can depend on if they need a shoulder to lean on, right? These types of things, right? Now, in my experience, when men take this is difficult. You have to be stoic to do this. You have to put in that work, that emotional work, right? Mm-hmm. However, this is more along the lines of like meeting those needs that she has. And when you, and I hope I'm describing this well, when you go through those motions, right, and you assume that responsibility, it's amazing the kind of desire that can generate. Like it just it generates very organic desire in my experience. Okay. Now I just described that. That was kind of a jump around way of describing it. Now I want to hear what you have to say about that whole thing.
Well, and I think it needs to be mutual.
Okay.
Because men have needs as well. And one of the things that women really are wanting, or they say, let me rephrase this, they say they want, and they actually do, is to have the men open up to them as well, for me to be able to provide that. But it's a little bit scary, as you say, because that's a big responsibility. And how do I deal with, you know, we want men to be open, and then when they are, sometimes we don't know how to handle that. And so the message that we send to men is open up, but don't open up too much. I'm like, okay, yes. No, you can't do that. No.
I had a gentleman on the podcast the other day named Michael LaRocque, and we literally talked about that exact same phenomena. And I think a lot of men are very confused about that. And here's my interpretation of it. And this is what I've found to be true. I think it's true. It seems to work out pretty well nowadays in my life, but like, it's like, here's the difference. You do want to be vulnerable. Like if I had a stressful day, I'm going to sit down with my partner. I'm going to say, "Ooh, what a stressful day. This and this and this happened. You know, wow, so-and-so was a jerk, whatever." Right. However, here's the difference. If I sit down and I'd be like, "Oh my God, I hate my life. Everything's going to hell. You know, there's no hope for any of us." Like if that's kind of the spirit, then she's like, "Oh my God, he's supposed to be the leader."
Then she's terrified.
Yeah, 100%.
Then she's terrified. Yeah.
And so that's, I think kind of basically where the hard line is, right? What do you think about that?
And I agree. And I wish I could remember, it was a quote by a gentleman that it's like, you know, it's knowing when to be strong. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's knowing when to be strong and when it's okay not to be. And I really wish I could remember who it was and what he actually said. And it may actually have been somebody that I was talking to once about stoicism. Because it's about the timing, and as you're talking about it, almost the manner of it. Because you know, we've changed a lot over the time, society's changed, there's been all kinds of stuff, but those inherent masculine, feminine, protector, provider, nurturer, those are all ingrained in how we're put together. And it doesn't mean we're not capable human beings. It just means tendencies. And so it can get really scary. I hear the noise in the middle of the night and I want you to go find out what it is. And you're scared, but I don't need to know that you're, you know, because I need you to be the strong man. Right. It's all very convoluted. And sometimes we have to do just what we're doing now, is talking about it and laughing about it.
Yes.
Because it's like, this is crazy. And who designed the system?
Yeah. And appreciate the differences, because it's like, I mean, I don't know, but like I've said this very often. It's like, I love women. Like, I think that they're fascinating. They're amazing. I have friends who are women, like amazing women friends. I've dated amazing women. You know, I think that, like, there's just no part of me that dislikes women. It's like, okay, but why, Josh, why do you like women? Well, they're different. There's a fascination, there's an attraction, and there's another element. It's like, so it's like the other side of the coin. It's the, mm-hmm. it's the other dimension. And so if these differences, make for such a rich existence between us. And so, and that's partly why in our modern society, whenever people get bent out of shape about saying like, oh, they're different, the differences, it's like, in a way, if you try too hard to make men and women fit into the same, like the same square all the time, same box, you're eliminating a lot of beauty and variation that exists within our species. And, mm-hmm. and I think it's a shame. I don't like it. I'm like, do not put us in the same box. We're right. very different. And it's in our best interest to understand it, understand the nuances, and to understand that there's also individual personality and individual, you know, every person's different too, just like men and women are different. And that all plays a factor, right?
Well, and I think that the important thing is that one isn't better than the other. And I think that that's where we get caught up in that somehow if I'm in my feminine, I'm weaker. And it's like, yeah, you tell me how weak it is to bring a baby into the world. I'm sorry. No, there's no weakness around that whatsoever. You know, so it's this, you know, and I think that's where it comes from, is the judgment from the outside that one is better than the other. It's like, no, there's, as you said, there's beauty in both.
Absolutely. 100%. And there's a lot of power in the feminine. The feminine is so incredibly powerful. I talk to the women in my mastermind tribe about this all the time. If they start to feel a little bit down on themselves or something, it's like, man, you just need to be reminded how powerful your feminine energy is and the effect that has on men. Like, it's crazy. If women could get inside of a man's head for 5 minutes, they would never lack confidence for another second of their whole life. If they could just jump in. Do you feel like you understand men probably better than most women? Do you feel like that you tap into that confidence because you understand men so much?
I think so. And the flip side is that I really like men. I find them interesting. I find them, you know, the same thing. And it's, you know, and one thing you don't want to do is let women into your brains because
well,
you don't want to give us any more power than we already have.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's strategically, maybe we not do that, but in theory,
yeah. You know, I mean, and the truth of the matter is that we all have the same fears, right? Mm-hmm. I have the fear of being rejected. You know, we all have this, and it's just, you know, and people aren't, there are some people who aren't going to like me, and I have to deal with that. And then, you know, when people say, well, you know, I want people to like me, it's like, well, do you like everybody? And they go, no. And I said, so then why should everybody like you? But you know, it's these natural things of wanting to belong, because we are tribal, you know, we are communal creatures. Mm-hmm. We're not meant to live on our own. And so it's part of this.
Okay. So now I'm going to ask you another question. This was maybe a little tougher. I don't know. It may not be tough for you. Probably be easy for you to answer, actually. But couple, you know, married couple, they're like listening in and they're like, wow, this is interesting, but man, I'll be honest, my marriage, I don't have much hope for it. It's in a bad place. It sucks. I don't know what's going to happen. Quick, dirty tips. What should couples do right now? If they're listening to this and they're like, you know what? My marriage sucks. I'm afraid it's going to end. I don't want it to end. I wish I could fix it. I don't know how to fix it. Obviously every situation is different, but if you just had to be like, you know, usually these are some steps that really improve things. What are they? Like, just the quick and dirty version.
Well, quick and dirty, get help.
Okay.
Really and truly. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you don't need your partner to go with you. This is a fallacy. If you want your marriage to be different, you can change it on your own, but you can't change it on your own with the same knowledge that you have right now, because the knowledge that you have right now has created the problem. So find somebody. So whether, I mean, and you know, and sometimes it could be self-help. I don't necessarily recommend that, because it's like, great, I've got all this information and I have no idea how to implement it.
Yeah. Or you can get stuck in a, an echo chamber.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and the longer people wait, the worse it's going to get. The average, and I don't know if this is still valid. I think John Gottman came up with a statistic that couples are in crisis or in trouble for an average of 7 years before they seek help. Okay. And I say, would you walk around with a broken leg for 7 years?
Yeah, no.
But you know, there's this fear that we don't know how to make it work. The information is out there. Mm-hmm. We do a horrible job of getting it to people. And so the first thing I would say, well, there's two things. Mm-hmm. The other down and dirty thing would be, and here's something that can help almost immediately. Find three things every day that you appreciate about your partner and share it with them.
Okay.
That flips the negative. That is a down and dirty tool. Mm-hmm. That's it. And because once I go looking for it, because they go, oh, my partner's horrible. It's like, no, I have been tasked to find three things that I appreciate about my partner today, and I have to share it with them.
It's like a quota, and it's like putting in the reps for the gratitude, for the positive mindset. I love it.
Yeah. And so those two things. And then the other thing that I would do, and we talked about this at the very beginning, is when I feel myself getting frustrated, angry, upset, zip the lip, breathe, and figure out what's causing that. What I am doing, not what my partner's doing, what's going on with me.
Like self-awareness.
Because I have the power to change the situation, my interpretation of the situation. Mm-hmm. So excellent. There you go. Those are my three down and dirty things.
I love it. No, that's perfect. Awesome.
But I also have to say, be careful about the professional that you choose.
Okay. What, maybe if someone's like, why, like what are you looking for?
Okay. You want to choose somebody who does this work, because doing this, I mean, lots of shingles out there, lots of options. Mm-hmm. And you want somebody who is supportive of marriage, of not marriage in general and your marriage in particular.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, my profession, marriage and family therapists, many of them will not take a stand for the marriage. And it's like, no, you need to go to somebody. And I'm not saying that we'll never see that another option, but basically that is their stance towards it, is that I am pro this relationship and I'm going to help you figure it out.
Okay. So that's what you're looking for. In other words, you want that. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. That does make sense. Yeah. No, totally makes sense. If you're looking for a business coach, you wouldn't want to go to a coach that says, well, one option may just be to get out of the business.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Hey, that's like
just shut the door. See, it's like,
Go back to work, go back to being an employee. That's
right.
Totally. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. That absolutely makes sense. All right. Okay. So I feel like this is probably a good place to start to wrap it up. We've covered some really, really good stuff. I do want to ask you just one more question. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering this just a little while ago and it hasn't come up yet. When you talk to people who have marriage problems, like right now in our culture, in our world, is there any like problem that you see like way more than others, like very typical, you know, like something that is just super common that seems to be happening at this point in our culture?
Yes. And it's been happening for a while, and it's got things flipped upside down. I talked about it briefly about the busy, and this is a part of the busy, especially if you have children, putting your children ahead of your marriage. We live in a very child-centric society. Everything's about the kids. We are running ourselves crazy trying to make sure that our kids have everything so they can succeed, quote unquote. And the one thing that we are neglecting is the number one thing that provides a strong foundation for children to succeed is taking care of their parents' marriage.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. 100%.
And so that's, and I get this. I've raised two children into adulthood. I understand the pressures. I get it. I think my son was put on the planet to teach me all kinds of lessons. Like, you don't have to do all these crazy things and for your child to be successful. Because he goes like, Mom, I'm not doing that. It's like, okay. And he's perfectly successful. Mm-hmm. But we get caught up in the fear. And the other thing is that when there are problems in the relationship, it's easier to go and deal with the kids because our kids love us and we're in charge, by the way. And mm-hmm. so that's the dynamic. And it's much harder to go, I got to go deal with this other person.
Gotcha. It's almost like a priority thing almost.
It is.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
It is.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Awesome. Awesome advice. All right, Leslie, where can people find you online or find your work? And, if they wanted to contact you, what's the best way?
Well, they can find me. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, although I'm rarely on Twitter. I mean, Twitter's not my favorite. I'm on LinkedIn. It's Leslie, L-E-S-L-I. Thank you, mother. No E. Dorries, D-O-A-R-E-S. Very weird. Don't ever try to find me by my name because you can't do it. But the other place you can find me, I have two websites. One is theherohusbandproject.com. And then the other one is Foundations with an S, F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Those are the two ways that they can find me.
Awesome. Also, I'm going to be putting a bunch of those links down in the description. So if you people listening to this, you want to just find the easy link to click, you'll find it in the description. But awesome. All right. Leslie, thank you so much for being here and for sharing this. You are obviously very wise about these things. I always learn things when I talk to you. I love it. And also a fellow John Gottman reader. I love that. I don't talk to very many people who read John Gottman. So, and I think he's a superhero. So I love that you,
I mean, if you want to go to the source, because he actually researches relationships, he's just, he's the one who gets in the nuts and bolts and does this. And he is worth reading.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. The Man's Guide to Women is one of my top three books. Just like amazing book. Amazing mm-hmm. for men. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Yeah. But thank you so much for sharing. And I thank you so much for being here on the podcast and just really appreciate you showing up and doing the good work that you do for relationships and for men and for just helping people to understand the human machine a little bit better. Because if we can understand it a little bit better, we can have a better experience. It's just, life can be very good. We do a little bit of work on ourselves, right?
Well, great. And thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome. All right. That's going to be it for this one. Go with grace, my friends. Never give up your power. This is Josh Segafis signing off.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to visit www.joshuasegafis.com. Catch you on the flip side.